Hello there, I'm Tim and he's John, and this is episode 138 of the Van Hemlock Podcast.
Back.
It's been ages since I fluffed one of those.
It is.
Wow,
it is.
I must be learning how to do this. Yes, we're back with a topic show.
I'm surprised you remember the number.
It's the names I've trouble with, the names.
Yeah, topic show.
Topic show, yes. And we completely drew a blank for topics this week, so we went to Twitter to ask for help.
Yes. And we got a couple of responses very quickly,
yep.
Which is good.
So we have a few miniature topics to talk about this show.
And then we've also got a couple of other bits that we wanted to talk about. So this is basically just a quick, rapid-fire...
Potpourri.
Potpourri of topics.
Potpourri of topics. I hate potpourri.
Potpourropics.
What?
I don't know.
All right.
I wish I hadn't said that.
We better get on with it, really.
Okay. Starting off, Ackley jumped in with... the importance of leadership in MMOs, pitfalls, drawbacks, if any, perks, how to do it and how not to, personal experiences.
Oh gosh, keep it light, eh?
Yeah. Cheers, pal.
So we're talking probably what, group gameplay, yeah, in MMOs specifically. Obviously, if you're soloing, you don't give a damn about leadership.
I can tell you my personal technique.
Go on then.
Avoid it at all costs.
Well, that's a surprisingly common one, actually. Something I've come across in pretty much all my MMO troubles, Freudian slip, is the pickup. When pickup grouping, very few people want to take charge. Very few people want to start a group, yeah? But almost everyone wants to join one that's already been started. I mean, that prized number 6 or number 5 slot in pickup grouping in all MMOs, really. Anything where there's teamwork or group-based dungeons. It's just a lot less, I suppose, perceived hassle. I mean, what is it that makes people want to avoid starting groups? They want to avoid stepping up and, you know, you'll look at a zone chat and there'll be like 5 or 6 people all going LFG, LFG, LFG constantly. And you're just thinking, well, if all of you 6 people just formed a group, you'd have got half a dungeon done by now. But most people want to join. No one wants to start. No one wants to invite.
Responsibility.
It's responsibility, certainly. I mean,
I can't be responsible for the people dying under my command.
Yes.
Not,
yeah,
again.
The horror. Yeah. It wasn't your fault, man. You couldn't have known.
It was my fault.
Yeah, it was actually your fault. Yeah, I mean, it is an act of responsibility, starting a group, because you're then sort of assuming, well, yeah, we use the word leadership. I mean, you're assuming some sort of command and assuming, I suppose, a position above the other people who then go ahead and join your group. You know, they'll be looking to you for direction, looking to you for the pace of things, the speed of things, where we're going, what we're doing. They'll be blaming you when it goes wrong, if it goes wrong, of course.
Yeah.
They may congratulate you if it goes right.
No, they won't.
And it won't go right.
It's a pickup group.
It's pickup grouping. So the pickup group, certainly, the leadership thing is an entirely different ball game, I'd say, to just sort of swaggering along into slot number 5 and doing your little appointed role by rote and then going away at the end of it all. Hopefully, best having had more fun than if you'd have just sort of stared at a wall for 2 hours. But being the leader is a lot more responsibility. You have to constantly be evaluating. It's about feedback. It's about how's things going in terms of gameplay and also in terms of group psychology as well. You have to sort of be, you know, keeping an eye out for the troublemakers in the group, trying to appease everyone. If the group decides they want to do 2 different things, it's up to you to decide and give reasons why, or don't give reasons why. You know, bad and good leadership. Certainly in the pickup group. Static group leadership? We're talking guild groups here, or guild leadership, I suppose.
I avoid that. I can't do it. I've had too many games ruined by it.
Well, it does become quite... I don't know. I'm not sure if I'd call myself a guild leader. We have a lot of little static groups going. I suppose, used this show and the forum associated with the website of this show just to organise, really, just to give people a common place and time of the week to meet up in a particular game, because otherwise the odds of you bumping into each other randomly are quite slim. And beyond that, it's I wouldn't say I lead particularly. Sometimes I suggest things we ought to go and do, and most people are happy to go and do that. One thing I do find, though, is that I tend to end up in a lot of groups where everyone is fine to do whatever, you know. I'll suggest
something. Nobody wants
leadership. I'll ask if we want to go and do something, and everyone is fine with that. Everyone is, yeah, I don't mind whatever, you know. So I don't know what that does. It sort of sends me a message that I could pretty much impose my iron will on you all and you will all obey.
I think you should do that more often.
I don't do that because that's not really the sort of person I am. I'm quite, I don't know, I mean, it seems odd, but I am quite, I'm quite reluctant to step forward as a leader type in these games, you know, in group leading. I'm quite happy for anyone else to take it, to dictate where we go and what we do and how we do it. But I don't know, it's somebody's got to suggest a thing, otherwise you'll just sit there and do nothing, really. So, you know, if that kind of role needs fulfilling, I might as well. So have you got any leadership anecdotes you want to talk about? Shall we talk about the Star Wars Galaxy's Town again?
No, we've talked about it enough. All right, was horrific.
We always talk about that. You were mayor in name only, though, really, weren't you? You didn't particularly suggest any bold plans for future development.
I tried it, but nobody agreed with me.
Fair enough.
So I stopped.
Well, that was an interesting example there. That was the game imposing a leadership upon the player base that wouldn't have come about naturally. It wasn't really a guild. It wasn't really a pickup group or anything like that. You know, let's put politician in as a gameplay role, which is just bizarre, I thought.
Yeah, slightly ill-advised, I would say.
Yeah. But yeah, guild leadership, well, I mean, I'm trying to think of other references and other people who could best answer these sorts of questions about guild leadership. Do comment on the forum, on the thread. We'll set up a thread with your own experiences about how you feel leadership works. I think on a small scale, it is kind of important, though. It's kind of necessary. Any activity where six people are going to go and do a thing together needs some form of direction, some form of here is where we're going, this is what we're going to do, this is how we do it, and so on. How hands-on and how dictatorial that becomes is entirely down to individuals, I suppose. Being a good leader, is about knowing the capabilities of all the people in your group and knowing how they'll go about doing it and knowing you can trust them to get on with certain things, but other things they'll need telling what to do. Being a bad leader, I suppose, micromanagement, you know, just dictating every single thing, what buttons to use. I've been in groups where that's been done. You're in this group, you're doing your thing. I'm thinking World of Warcraft here, actually, funnily enough.
Yeah.
yeah, where other members of the group knew my class better than I did and were questioning why I was pressing particular buttons that I was pressing and in what order I should be using this, this, and this, you know. And you think, well, God, when I can't even press numbered buttons in an order that appeases the group leader, perhaps I'm not really fit for this kind of command structure. I mean, they don't even do that in real armies, do they? You generally trust the trooper to get on with firing the rifle at the enemy and stuff. No, don't hold it like that. Hold it like that. Now push that bit. No. Pull the trigger. And that's it. And, you know, and you're in command of however many people. You know, you've got to trust every people to be able to get on and do their thing.
Oh, but if your soldier was holding the gun backwards, say, and shooting himself each time he fired,
you might want to draw attention to that, yes. So I suppose leading works well, but there is a skill. It works well if you've got the matching skill, which is being able to follow orders, you know, being able to be led, being able to get on with the basics of whatever it is you're doing, but to refer up the particular command decisions, whatever that means in whatever game context you're playing. I don't know. It's a strange thing. I don't feel like I lead particularly. I suggest, and people mostly go off and we'll all do it together. You know, it's a very free and easy style, I suppose, if I'm even a leader at all in these static groups. But important role. It does need doing.
It does.
Any group content. I mean, if you're soloing, go for it. Solo. You know, you are your own leader. A lot of people are more comfortable doing that as well. I mean, I'm thinking of Planet Side as well. We've been playing that recently, and they have command ranks in there. If you're the squad leader and you successfully capture a base, you get command XP, which is different to the normal XP. And if you get enough of that, you start opening up all sorts of leadership abilities. That's where all those orbital strikes from the sky keep coming from.
Yeah.
But also you get access to broadcast chat and command chat and so on. That's the sort of teal writing that comes up that everyone on your side can see in that particular zone or the whole world. And a lot of that is just weird. It's just, well, for starters, the game's so old and so advanced that anyone left playing it has probably ground out their CR5 by now anyway. So, I mean, even when I was playing it about 2 years ago, I think something like 50% of all players were command rank 5 generals, effectively. They were in charge of the entire empire. Half of the players on your side. That's too many chiefs and not enough Indians by far, I think.
Are you allowed to use the Chiefs and Indians?
I don't know. Is that ethnically insensitive?
I think
do
it
apologize.
May well be.
But the point being is that you don't run an army where everyone is a general. Well, half of the army is five-star generals and half of them are just infantry. Because that all gets rather confusing when, as often happens, they have big arguments on broadcast chat because you've got like 50 or 60 big personalities.
I'm no expert in leadership, but I believe you're not meant to do that.
I know. And it's such a weird system anyway. I mean, you can't possibly reward XP. I mean, imagine a hypothetical MMO where there was leadership XP, like in PlanetSide, but of a World of Warcraft type. So the group, whoever's the leader in the group gets special XP for, I don't know what. How would you even measure that? How do you measure leadership on a numerical scale? On
success
a numerical
of the
scope.
Group.
Yeah, I suppose you could use the Mass Effect 2 thing. How many of your supporting cast make it back from the end of it all?
Yeah.
get extra points.
Yeah, but is that leadership? Because knowing when to sacrifice
well,
the people.
That's more personal charisma, I think, in the Mass Effect example. That's not really leadership as such. But, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to think how you could possibly promote and reward good leadership in an MMO gameplay setting. How would you do that? It just seems... It's something you're never going to get XP for. You're never going to get a shiny shoulder pad for. You'll either do it or you won't do it, and you do it right and you don't do it right. And people, I don't know, do people remember good group leaders from pickup grouping? Do they put them on the friends list and ask to join their groups again?
Probably.
Is that how guilds form?
That's possibly how guilds are born.
Typically what happens,
Or angels get their wings.
What I find is that back in my Warcraft days, I'd play a lot of pickup grouping, and a lot of them were pretty awful, and I dined heartily off of the anecdotes on my blog. But you would remember the good leaders and the good groups, and typically they'd be ones where it was just like four guild mates and me because they were missing a slot or something and I lucked out on the pickup role. So what happens is you end up sort of going along with a guild who seem to function well together and respect and know each other. I think respect is important in the guild leading thing. Well, guild or group leading, you know, you got to trust and agree with the opinions of the person you're following the orders from. Otherwise, you might as well not be there. You start getting all belligerent and just sacrificing the group on purpose, just to make your point. I think there is a certain type of personality that does well doing it, and some that don't. Some people just do not respect the people they're leading enough. You know, they see the whole exercise as a means to an end. I just need five people to come in and kill the monster for me. You know, that kind of leadership, not so great. I think, I don't know. Inspiration, you get inspired to work better by rewards and encouragement. I mean, how many group leaders in pickup groups compliment people for good pulls and so on?
None.
I expect some do. But
no one.
You know, it's carrots and sticks as well. You can't just keep shouting
sticks
at people until they're so terrified.
Rapid
that they
fire
don't,
sticks.
Don't get it wrong. Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think it's something that can be learned, though. I mean, I don't think it's an intrinsic thing. Some people aren't born leaders, and some people are. I think you learn by empathy and by practice. You know,
most MMO players are born asses, then.
Fair
which
enough.
Is why pickup groups don't work.
Well, I think the pickup group is there because you don't, you know, gets that hideous reputation because you just got no stake in the relationships of between the group members there. You're probably never going to see these people again. What does it matter? Just do what you do, get your thing, get the hell out. And you go in there with bad preconceptions as well because you hear how bad pickup groups are. I don't know if a good personable leader can reverse that kind of effect coming into a pickup group. You know, I just do not start groups unless they're friends and people I already know. I'm just so intimidated, I suppose, by the high stakes of it all and the pressure of the situation. That
and
I
you
just
know it'll end badly.
Well, it may end well, but I just don't want to try because it's just a huge nightmare, isn't it? Five uncaring, silent strangers waiting for you to provide them with entertainment. You know, it's not what you sign up for in your recreation time. And that's why I think so few people bother to start groups. And the ones that do tend to be quite thick-skinned about it all. They tend to not care that there is pressure or that people may not think they've done a good job leading. If they don't care, ironically, they make better leaders because they can just plunge straight on through with that massive, massive self-confidence and hopefully get the job done. But in a fun manner, that's a different thing again. I don't know. Have I ranted enough?
I think so. We can move on to the next one.
All right. Well.
Next, Daisy Adair says, how big is your Steam directory?
How big is my Steam directory? I don't know.
I've just measured mine.
Have you measured yours? My PC's not to hand, but I only have surprisingly few Steam games. I've got about 10 games, and some of those are demos.
Mine is 225 gigabytes. Remember, folks, the PC's dead.
Wow. I mean, is there that much stuff on Steam? Are you just downloading videos and things as well?
I've got no videos.
That's all games. Software. Wow. Yeah. Good grief. 200. There you go. I think mine, you'd be lucky if that was even 10 gig, to be honest, mine. Dark Messiah of Might and Magic, Spellforce 2, Portal and Half-Life, and that's about it. Puzzle Quest. I think that's a lot. Yeah, so not very in my case. But, yeah, I mean, we were talking about this the other day, weren't we? Well, this ties into the DCUO platform breakdown, doesn't it? We were trying to work out where all these PC people had gone, because Smedley reckons it was 50-50 PC, PS3.
Give or take a couple.
And he'd know, because he's sat there at the controls. Yeah. He's got all his numbers immediately to hand, and he's got no reason to lie about that kind of thing. But The Guardian were posting a games chart thing, and that came from some charty people, who I forget exactly who, but was it the UK or both, or US?
The numbers we had were UK.
And that was something like 80% PS3, 20% PC.
Yeah.
And they specifically don't measure digital downloads, so I'm wondering how much of that Steam business. Has it all gone Steam?
I think so.
Yeah, and they, I think they've developed a very quiet and stealthy monopoly on PC game distribution.
I think so. I think it's at the point where we should be worried about it.
Yeah, I mean, if you go online, if you're buying games online, I suppose you can download direct from Amazon. Do they do that kind of thing?
Nope.
Okay, so you're buying physical copies from a physical store, or you're getting it online, and you can either get it online from, generally, it'll either be the company that makes the thing, or it'll be Steam. I suppose direct to drive, I'd be fascinated to see some kind of breakdown of online PC distribution hubs, as it were, Steam, Direct to Drive. I can't even name three, you know. So I think perhaps Steam's achieved such a critical mass of awareness that most people don't even think to look elsewhere.
Is Steam now the PC?
It's possible they managed to subvert the PC as a gaming platform itself to become a console, you know, the Valve console, you know. In the same way the Xbox belongs to Microsoft and the PS3 belongs to Sony, you know.
Will we see, when it comes to the next round of consoles, a effort from Valve, which is just basically a standard PC?
Oh, what, you think they Wow, that'd be amazing. The Valve making a kind of PC-based console piece of hardware Steam.
Or announcing the specs for it so that other companies can do it.
It's not so far-fetched. I mean, on live... You know, people they're developing hardware specifically for distribution platform there. Be interesting to see. I wonder if that might be Valve's sinister master plan.
It could well be.
Conspiracy alert.
Right, Dr. Torag says, chatting games. Okay.
We do, often. Yes. Lengthily.
Unless it's DC Universe Online.
Ah, chatting games, yes. So what, chat systems, voice comms and so on, the prevalence of...
They're quite
important. PlanetSide has, and I think had, from almost the word go, integrated voice chat.
Ooh.
I don't believe I've ever heard anyone using it, and even when I've joined in the occasional pickup squad in there. So I guess everyone... I think it's like Eve, isn't it? The Eve voice.
Yeah.
It's fantastic in theory and principle, but... If Eve goes down, you don't want your voice disappearing too.
No, you need that as well.
Which is why most people go with external solutions, TeamSpeak, Ventrilo and Mumble. You know, that sort of thing.
Yep.
Or is he perhaps talking about chat windows and chat interfaces?
I don't know. I think he's just basically giving us a large thing to talk about.
He's just pulling ideas out of the air. Oh, fair enough. Chat's a problem in DCUO, though.
It's a massive problem. There is no keyboard on the default controller. You can have a USB keyboard, or you can have the stupid little clippy keyboard that goes on the controller.
Mm.
But all the time, if you want to chat, you have to switch out of the you're doing stuff mode into a chat mode, so you can't do it during action sequences.
Yeah. Well, and it's a very particularly action-based sort of game, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a button masher.
So voice or don't bother.
It's voice or don't bother, yeah. And, of course, the problem with voice is it has to be working.
Mm.
Which it has been a little bit flaky for the first few weeks of the game.
Oh dear. Is that having an impact on the way... Well, I mean, you typically solo everything anyway, don't you? But do you think people are having trouble grouping and whatever?
I haven't seen much people grouping or chatting in random. There's no one just hanging out in the global chat channels.
Your sort of Ironforge trade chat type of equivalent.
Yeah, it just sitting there looking at the local chat, no one's talking.
So, yeah, well, I think chat... I mean, I tend to use Mumble with static groups of friends almost exclusively nowadays, and I won't bother with voice with strangers in these games. But, you know, I think it is good and encouraging and healthy to see chat just going by, you know, just people having conversations. You know,
remind you that you're somebody else,
the alone together thing, you know, just remind you you're not playing a single player game, particularly if you're soloing. It's nice to see, even if people had been really just, you know, arses and having massive arguments and being... and just swearing into the chat. You know, it's just nice to know that there's someone else out there doing, you know, playing the game that you're playing as well. And that's part of the MMO for me.
Mm. He also asks, when will the first VR MMO appear on a phone?
Oh, God. Are we talking augmented reality here?
It'll never happen.
I'm sure so. Rubbish. I'm surprised something hasn't happened already.
Nope, it's rubbish.
You went to a shop and you got points on a thing because you took your phone there and showed it the shop.
That was augmented reality. That was just a go to game shop.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, no, I don't think these things work really in an MMO space.
I don't know. It has that sort of feel of a niche in which something really clever could suddenly happen, you know.
Is Foursquare a MMO?
Is that the one where you claim streets and build things on them in a virtual
sense? Well, no, that's where you go places, check in and become mayor.
Right, and other people are all playing that as well? You can go to places where someone is already mayor?
And you can take over by claiming it more than they do.
Well, that's more or less an MMO, I'd say. It's a bit abstract, certainly, but...
There you go, Foursquare's already there, and it's rubbish.
Have a look at Foursquare, then, yeah.
It's rubbish. he also asks, are new MMOs any better than old ones that are constantly updated? Nope, they're always worse.
What, you reckon? They've changed it. There'll be some big NGE. Oh, God, there I go again. There'll be some particular rule set change that will transform the game for something far, far worse.
No, just you can never compete against the raft of content on a game which has been out for a couple of years.
I mean, look at, I don't know, EverQuest 1's up to its, like, 20th expansion or something now. I don't know if that makes it particularly better or worse than, say, Rift. But I think you do need to let these games mature a bit because... Well, even if they're, you know, just taking bugs aside completely, you know, assuming the thing launches perfect as designed on day one, it's the design itself that needs to be play tested over a large number of people in a very large length of time. You know, I joke about my 3 month rule and everything, but to be honest, it ought to be more like 9 months or a year. You know, it takes a while, not for the bugs to be fixed, but for the overall design to be evaluated. Does it actually work like we thought it would?
I would say Star Trek Online is only just getting to the state where it's at a point where it should have launched.
Yeah, there'll be big changes to the way the game works, even if it technically worked right at launch. It you know, it may take a while for, it doesn't really flow like this, people aren't really using it the way we thought it would be used, that sort of thing. And a good and smart game will adapt the rule set to meet how people are actually using it for real, rather than a sort of theoretical. Most game designers will make a game that they'd want to play, but they're not representative of the entire gaming audience, and it may turn out that almost everyone disagrees with the person who designed it on how it ought to be played. That sort of thing, that takes time to happen, time to work through. New chapters, new content, expansions, ongoing stories. I think that's why a lot of us put
end
up with
content.
That's why a lot of us put up with monthly fees at all. You know, I mean, it's all going free to play now, but it's the same difference. You just have to buy more content. You know, you pick and choose the content. Either way, the availability of a game that's been out for quite a while. I mean, what does the cash shop look like on day one of a cash shop free to play type MMO? Probably not that much worth having in there. You have to wait for new stuff to appear. Eventually, you have a very large list of things you can pick and choose from. So the analogy still holds even with free-to-play. I think, you know, the longer they've been out, the better. They mature over time.
Yes.
Of course, on the downside, the longer they're out, the more people have gotten bored and gone away. So that's the job of the new content, to try and revitalise interest. You mentioned your Star Trek Online episodes. That's a prime example, I think. I'm pretty sure they've got lots of people come back to have a look for those.
Oh, yeah, definitely they do.
And it's taken a while for them to get to the point where they've decided, actually, we should be doing it like this. You know, how long did it go before? Where was the first of these episodes?
Late summer.
And it'd been out for quite some time before that.
It's been out for a year now.
Yeah, so it's taken a while to get going with the bits that seem to be working at the moment, I suppose.
And there's also stuff like there's the Foundry just going in for making your own levels.
I must do a bit more research into that. I think Teepa at West Karana's done some good posts on how that works and what it's like. But it just sounds fascinating.
Yeah. I've used it quite a lot and it is quite interesting.
Yeah, you should do some reporting for us.
That would mean having an opinion. I don't do opinions at all. Okay, next. St. Mistaken says mini games in games, lazy design or clever compromise.
Compromise.
Well, you know, you've got to make doing something take some effort.
So mini games, I suppose. What sort of thing we're talking about there? I'm sort of brought to mind with BioWare almost immediately. Pretty much every BioWare RPG these days contains a weird, strange offshoot mini game thing you have to go and do.
Let me match these things on a circuit board.
Yeah, the unlocking, the code hacking thing, the oscilloscope work with the mining. You know, I mean, Mass Effect 1, I think it was the driving the tank around. That was effectively an entirely different mode of play. Suddenly, we're in this tank on this planet. I remember Jade Empire. That was, you remember 1942, Flying Tigers, sort of top based upward scroller flying shooty game. You had to do that every time you were travelling between hubs in your little team plane in Jade Empire. Yeah, Knights of the Old Republic. You had the pod racy bit and the token. What was that bit where you had to sometimes shoot a TIE fighter down when you were travelling between planets?
Yeah,
that was rubbish.
That was very rubbish.
Yeah, I mean, you know, BioWare do a lot of this. I think you find this in other games as
Star
well.
Trek Online, when you're scanning anomalies, has a match the waveform thing, which is really rubbish. More amplitude, less frequency.
Basically,
that's it.
Yeah, I mean, BioShock as well. The Pipe Mania game for hacking. That was a bit surreal.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I like the new one either. BioShock 2 for hacking, you just got this needle moving backwards and forwards across a dial, and there are red areas and there are green areas, and you have to mash the button when it's in a green bit.
That's what Fable 2 and 3 basically do for their mini-games.
Yeah, the emotes in Fable. You have to sort of, it goes backwards, gets smaller and smaller, and you have to let go when it's in the right. So a timing
and
exercise.
And also the crafting as well.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, what am I thinking of crafting mini-games?
There's EverQuest.
Yeah, that's a sort of time-based reactionary thing. Progress bar goes up. When a symbol shows up, you have to hit the matching button, otherwise it damages you, that sort of thing, EverQuest 2. I wonder if that... They're good and bad. I mean, on the plus side, they break up the main game, give you a bit of variety, which maybe welcome, may not be. On the other hand, they break up the main game and give you a bit of unwanted variety. They can often be very jarring. They can suddenly demand game skills from you that you hadn't been using in the previous 30 hours of gameplay, and suddenly it's a shooter. What? Hey, I thought I was playing an RTS, you know, or vice versa, whatever. I mean, what did you sign up for? What did you think the game was going to be about? Yeah, suddenly it's a memory game. What? I've just been shooting people. You know, I mean, you can't imagine Gears of War, that every time you reloaded, you had to do a Pipe Mania puzzle or something.
Yeah, but that's got the click at the right place.
Sort of a mini game, yeah, I suppose.
It's a very simple one. Basically, you've just got a bar that moves up, a line that moves up. If you click it within a certain area, you get better ammo.
Yeah.
Click it within the rest of the area, you get normal ammo. Click it at the wrong time, your gun jams, and you take a couple of seconds to get it working again.
I don't know. It depends entirely on the mini game itself, really. I mean, there are certain games I just don't enjoy, you know. And I don't tend to get on well with particularly harsh timing-based games, reaction-based games. You know, I'm not really that sort of person, to be honest. I'm quite methodical and ploddy. So, you know, when it suddenly comes up with, press the button now, and you miss it. Quick time events. Is that a mini game?
Yes.
That's a genre in itself.
We're counting them as a quick mini game then.
Yeah, well, it's timing-based exercise. Suddenly you have to press X or you'll die. You know, what? Hey, what was that all about? Where did that come from? I think if you're expecting to have to exhibit multiple types of gameplay in one game session, then that's not so bad. But if, you know, you're doing one thing, sudden Pipe Mania puzzles, another thing, and you're thinking, well, blimey, what was that all about? Where'd that come from? Quite disruptive, I expect, yeah.
Okay. What about the card game in EverQuest 2?
Yeah, now that's an interesting example taken to the... Oh, Patak from Knights of the Old Republic. Sorry, that was a weird, bizarre alien variant on Blackjack. The card game in EverQuest, that is an entirely different game that's been bolted onto EverQuest 2 as an aside, as something else. I mean, it doesn't have much of an impact on your main EverQuest 2 at all, and you can literally just sit under a tree in Kinos or something and just sit there and play that for 2 hours and then log off, having basically been playing the card game. You know, I mean, why would you even need to be in EverQuest 2 at all? You know,
yeah.
I think, I don't know if they have a standalone client for that or not. I'm not sure. But so I suppose when the mini game becomes bigger or as big as the main game, then I think you've probably got trouble there. Yeah, you might as well you might as well just go off and play the mini game as its own standalone thing. Sell two products to the same customer, whatever. I don't know. It can be taken a bit too far, yeah.
Okay, next, Max Costello says, bring back the Twitter question. Okay, maybe we will. Joe Hart says, the place of dedicated handheld in mobile gaming these days.
This is one for you, I think, probably. I'm something of a Luddite with handhelds.
Well, he published a video, he's Jovial Gamer yesterday,
okay,
where he was basically talking about he doesn't see where these fit in.
We'll bung a link in the show notes somewhere.
If we remember. Yes, we will. And I'm not sure I agree.
So what's the essential argument here?
The essential argument is you have mobile phones nowadays.
Yes.
So your dedicated gaming machine, your handheld,
yeah,
isn't your go-to device for dedicated handheld gaming. Because you always have your phone with you. You don't always have your 3DS or your PSP or whatever.
Presumably, yeah, assuming you've only got limited room in your pockets and or handbag, you probably don't want like four or five different handhelds and an iPad.
And you're always going to have your phone.
The phone will be the item you can't do without, I suppose, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the questions about this new PSP is their announcement about the Android phone support more important? Is that where
it was interesting, wasn't it?
Is that where most of the money's going to be?
It's like, whereas all the others have gone with one handheld gaming thing and that's all their eggs in that basket, Sony have decided to hedge on two different formats.
Yeah, it's like they either can't make up their mind which one to go for, or they're trying to appease two different markets.
Which would suggest they've identified that there are two different markets here.
Which I think there are. I think everyone would agree that the phone market is a market.
Mm.
I just think there's some suspicion that the games console portable market doesn't actually exist anymore because the phones have destroyed it. Apple will have destroyed that market.
Yeah, this all does sort of hinge on how well the iPhone has done as a gaming platform versus all the traditional handhelds that you can't make phone calls.
And if you look at the best-selling games at the moment, they're all on the iPhone.
Mm.
Something like Angry Birds, massive success across every platform. I wonder, had nothing to do with dedicated gaming hardware.
I wonder if we focus too much on the traditional Sony versus Microsoft handheld little miniature spat, when in fact there's a much greater war going on there, really, isn't it, with the iPhone versus all the others.
Yeah, or Facebook against all the others.
Yeah, yeah, that kind of thing.
It's the smaller games which are designed to be playable in five-minute chunks.
Depends an awful lot on the format of the games available for the device. Yeah.
So something like Angry Birds, which is the one that everyone's going to keep going back to, is eminently playable because a good level in that will take you 30 seconds to do.
Yeah.
But it could take you 20 minutes to figure out that 30 seconds.
Well, it's all very well having Mass Effect 2 in your pocket, but that's an experience you want to sit on a couch and
that's
take
the
your
thing.
Time with.
Metal Gear Solid 4's coming to it, which has a 45-minute initial cutscene. I mean, we did that episode a while back where we did an episode on storytelling in games where I basically set the cutscene going at the start and I only had a couple of interactions throughout the entire show.
Yeah, hold on a minute, I have to press X. Right, now, what were we saying? Yeah, now, 45 minutes later. Right, we can start playing now.
I can tell you for sure that is not the portable experience I want for my devices. I know that. Everyone knows
that. Well, I don't know. Is there a movie watching contingent on the handhelds? Is there a market for people wanting to watch feature films from their pocket?
You can put them on. You get these triple play Blu-ray, DVD and digital combos now. iTunes has film downloads and rentals.
So I wonder how many people use their phone for that kind of thing. How often are you sat there? I mean, obviously you can pause the thing. But
people on trains and stuff, yeah, I'm
2 hours, well, yeah, maybe.
But I'm just not sure that people want to put 45 minutes into playing a game where they don't actually do any of the gameplay. It in the back of my mind, that does not feel right.
Which, that whole sort of view then favours the iPhone and your Angry Birds rather than your PSNGP thing and 40 and Metal Gear Solid 4 or whatever. Yeah.
And it just seems strange that that's one of the games they announced because it seems the least mobile-friendly game you could announce.
Mm.
I struggle to think of any other which is less interactive for so long.
Well, I don't know how representative I am. My phone runs on coal and emits copious amounts of steam when I make calls, but I just do not do handheld gaming at all. I mean, for me, gaming is very much a sit down in a comfortable environment, usually my own home, and you know, relax on the couch with an Xbox controller or sit at the desk of the PC and spend multiple blocks of hours getting really involved. And I've never really had. I mean, I owned a was it Sega one? Gear?
You have a Game Gear?
I had a Game Gear, I think. Huh?
Was it Game
Gear? No, not Lynx. No, okay. I think it was a Game Gear. It was quite a while. Going back a bit. I suppose it was a Mega Drive in handheld form.
Effectively.
Sort of. And I had a couple of games for it. And I did try to get involved. I had Prince of Persia, the original. It was a Mickey Mouse game. And it was like some sort of jewels or gems or something. It wasn't Tetris, but it was very similar. I just tried to get into it. And it never really clicked for me. I mean, I was always more interested in getting back on the PC and, you know, immersing myself in a big screen and large controller that my enormous claws can cope with.
But as a counterpoint, Sunday morning, I spent all morning in bed playing Elo Milo on my phone.
You're very lazy, aren't you?
I'm very lazy. and it was great. I didn't need to get up. I was nice and warm in bed. It was a cold day. And I was playing games on my phone in bed.
Yeah, yeah.
And there are some games which work really well on the iPad, for instance.
Yeah.
So
it's horses for courses, I think.
Flight Control works better on one of these devices than it does on the consoles, as the PS3 release of Flight Control proves. It just did not play as well using Move because it needed a touchscreen. So getting a version of that on the Android under PlayStation maybe would be interesting.
But for you, would you say that the absolute must is the device must be able to make phone calls above all else?
The device must be able to access data.
Access data, fair enough. Yeah, send emails, whatever.
I don't
tweet.
Talk to people.
Talking? Oh, God, no. That's how you catch diseases.
Tweeting, web pages, that sort of stuff.
Yeah, yes. Fair
and
enough.
Text messages as well.
Yeah. And if it can play games as well, that's a bonus. Yeah.
I got rid of my iPhone recently because I needed an upgrade and went with a Windows phone because I had a iPad, which I carry around most of the time anyway in my bag.
Yeah.
So I had the Apple stuff covered. On that, so I could play any Apple game I want on that, any of the iOS games, and I've got the Windows one for some of the Windows games I want to play.
Yeah, fair enough.
Now I've got to get myself an Android thing for the PlayStation games as well, which is a bit annoying. But yeah.
If you were forced to only carry one electronic device around with you, what would it be?
It'd be my phone.
It'd be the iPhone. No,
it'd be my Windows. It'd just be my phone, no matter what's on it. It will be my phone.
Whatever the phone is, yeah. So there you go.
Because if I break down somewhere, I want to be able to call and get myself retrieved.
The utility, yeah, absolutely.
And, yeah, I will get a PSP too, I'm sure of it.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't carry it around with me all the time.
Mm.
It'll sit next to my bed like my Kindle does. but it's not going to be my constant companion, because at the moment I don't see any of the games on it, the sort of stuff that I wouldn't rather be in a situation to play a PS3 game.
Mm-hmm.
If I want to play Metal Gear Solid 4, I would play it on the PS3 instead of that. Or if I want to play Uncharted, the PS3 is looking a lot more attractive still.
So, different pros and cons for each sort of device, but ultimately it's still got to be able to make phone calls. Yeah.
Yeah. So it
otherwise
might work.
Otherwise you'd just end up with a satchel full of ridiculously overpriced consumer electronics, which are just asking to be stolen by a guy on a moped.
And so many of them. And if you assume somebody's got a phone, no matter which manufacturer, they've got a phone, they've got an iPad because they're cool, you're then asking them to have a third device.
Well, yeah. I mean,
probably
Android
a fourth, because if they're going to have a mobile thing, they're going to have a 3DS because they want to play Pokemon.
It's some sort of bandolier with them all in, you know.
Yeah.
You just pull one out, pull whichever one out you need for the moment at hand. But that whole PS3 thing, the whole Sony thing on Android, that's looking very canny, actually.
Yeah, that looks like the intelligent move. That looks like
quite
the, we know what we're doing.
We need to get something on a phone. Yeah.
And it's going to be original PS1 games, so there's going to be some good games there.
Yeah. Your back catalogue's already there.
Microsoft, with their Xbox support on the Windows phone, is ports of Xbox Live games and ports of games from other platforms.
Right.
For instance, I've just finished Elo Milo, which is also available on 360.
Mm-hmm.
There's also Flight Control's on there, like it's on everything.
Mm.
And Angry Birds is coming to it. So it's most of the games on the platform are shared between it and iPhone and Android. So why would you need specifically that particular handheld to be able to do it. Whereas the Sony way of putting in the PS1 games, they're only really going to be available on that. So if you want to play Wipeout or whatever, you're going to go to that because that's going to drive you to where it's available.
Yeah, makes sense.
And you probably aren't going to see stuff like Flight Control or whatever coming to it because there's just no point in them doing it.
Mm.
And it'll probably be mainly old retro games.
No, there's definitely room for old retro games, no matter the platform.
Yeah, so I basically think that I don't know what the market is. I don't know why they're doing it, but I'm going to buy one anyway.
And I think what he said.
Next, Science Monkey, causing trouble, says PS3 versus Xbox 360.
I like the PS3 and I like the 360.
Just so I can decide. I suspect I'll end up buying both, although my wife says I should just buy both.
Right, that's some genuine consumer advice required here then.
Right, now the difference between the two is very little.
We need to be very objective and balanced here.
What it comes down to is what exclusives do you like?
Yeah, so in terms of games that are cross-platform, they're all much of a muchness.
Yeah, but cross-platform games nowadays are getting to be incredibly identical.
Very similar. You get some very tedious website articles comparing pixel-by-pixel screenshots.
And 99 times out of 100 now, they are saying they're identical.
The difference is negligible in most cases, yeah.
Now, the 360 has better online play.
It seemed, well, yeah, I have no personal experience with PlayStation Network myself, but the whole Xbox Live thing does seem a bit more joined up thinking.
Yep, but you
it
have
seems
to pay
a bit
for
more
it.
Integrated. Well, there is a yearly subscription. Was it about $40 a year, something like
something
that?
Something like that, yeah.
There is a silver option, which is free, but you don't get.
It's a free option now.
It's called free, isn't it? It's not silver anymore. Yeah, and you don't really get a lot with that, to be honest.
No,
just patches, really, isn't it?
Yeah, but then again, on the PS3, you have. Slightly more services. There's more video stuff. So yeah, generally my opinion is buy both.
Buy both. That's not helping anyone, is it? Get off the fence, man. Make a choice.
It's impossible to make a choice. They're too similar.
Okay.
They are very, very similar. And yeah, that's one of the big problems with this console
generation.
I will
go with get a 360 because that's what I've got and I am best.
Okay.
There you go.
If you like multiplayer, a lot of the multiplayer stuff is going exclusively for a limited period on the 360 now as well.
Also check with friends, obviously. You know.
Okay, yeah, that's the killer, really. Where are all your
where
friends?
Where are all your friends? Which ones have they all got? You know, I mean, a large proportion of my friends happen to be on the 360, so there's more available pool for Thursday Night Console Club, which we mostly do on a 360. Have you done a PS3 Console Club?
No.
No? Well, there you go.
No, very few PS3 people get interested in doing stuff.
Go on, then name some impressive exclusive franchises for each.
360, of course, has Gears of War and Halo,
mm-hmm.
And Fably, and what else does it have?
Oh, Mass Effect until quite recently.
Yeah.
Mass Effect 1, anyway.
Yeah, there's various other bits and bobs. Also, it has the Call of Duty maps first, the Homefront maps first.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and the PS3, some platform exclusives you'd recommend there?
Uncharted.
Uncharted's very good.
Yep, can't really... argue that Uncharted's probably one of the best games ever made.
Gran Turismo?
Yeah, Gran Turismo, but avoid that with a... yeah.
It depends what you're personally into.
The,
but yeah.
The 360 is Forza, mm-hmm. and the Gran Turismo's on the PS3, which is a good example of why you should never buy a PS3, because you don't want to support you don't want to support Gran Turismo, because it makes you do two-hour races where you spin out on the last feckin' lap and then lose.
And if you don't buy a
PS3... Because there's no rewind, and it's really, really annoying, and I want to cry.
If you don't buy a PS3, you won't have to spend most of our news shows cringing. So that's probably an unexpected benefit, too.
But on the other hand, you get Love Film on it. Well, he's American, so it doesn't really count.
Netflix?
Netflix is on both.
On both, okay. So generally not much in it.
No, there's very little in it.
Go with price. If economy is something you're looking for, you're probably looking for a 360. It's cheaper.
When it comes down to it, you want Gears of War and Uncharted, so that makes the decision
360
easy.
Has the fantastic witchcraft and voodoo that is Kinect, whereas PS3 has a ping pong ball on a stick.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of motion devices.
So
they
haven't released any overall sales numbers for Move. Have you noticed
that? We're looking
that?
Forward to that, though, when that does show.
Yeah.
I think we're probably a little bit biased to the 360 on this show, but that's personal opinions for you, and you can't go wrong with either, to be honest. DCUO available for the PS3, not for the 360.
Yes,
presumably
that's another reason to go for it.
Depends if you're a PC MMO gamer, or if you don't have access to a PC, or don't want to do MMOs on a PC, try DCUO, yeah. on the PS3.
Don't try it. Don't try it.
Despite all the bad things my co-host has been saying about it over
the
weeks.
Go and play it on Steam. Much better.
Fair enough. So we hope that's not just muddied the waters even more for you.
It's muddied it. Of course, you've got the Xbox Live Arcade games tend to be better than the PlayStation Network games.
In all seriousness, both platforms are very viable, very good pieces of equipment. I think I just think the 360 edges ahead a little bit.
Swings and roundabouts.
Indeed. There we go, back on the fence. Okay. Yeah. What else we got?
That's it from the random responses for the unadvertised message.
Sudden out of nowhere Twitter question, yeah.
We came up with a couple of other things in the pub.
Okay, then. Oh, this is going to be good. Some of our best ideas come from the pub.
You signed up with Raptor.
I signed up with Raptor, yes. Would you like me to talk a little bit about that?
Go on. Tell them what Raptor is.
Raptor's basically a big old sort of social network for gamers type of thing. It gives you a little client you can install on your PC, which will then spy on you and report back exactly your movements in all games.
To the mothership.
Yes. Oh, I don't doubt these. Well, it's given away for free, isn't it? It's a free service. Presumably, I can't even see any adverts on that page. So somebody somewhere must be paying somebody some of this information. I don't know. I'm a little bit suspicious. But my co-host's been on it and uses it to do his half of the What We're Playing show because he can't remember, you know, the alcohol-soddened grey matter there.
I can't remember the beginning of the show.
And I've recently started to have trouble remembering which three MMOs I play in exact order each week. So I thought, well, all right, we'll sign up for it, give it a go. So, yes, and it's now tracking me. It's following me. I've linked it to my Steam account and my Xbox Live account so it can spy on me there as well. It's not perfect. It doesn't seem to recognise the... Well, I didn't know. It just doesn't acknowledge Planetside. Presumably,
it has problems with Station Launcher.
The Station Launcher gives it trouble. I don't think it will track Pirates of the Burning Sea or EverQuest 2 either, if you're launching them through the launcher, which I think you can only do. So, yeah. I've gone through and manually added a whole load of games. It gives you a little breakdown on the corner there. When it did its automatic trawl, it pegged me down as a 360 gamer, and I thought, well, I'm not having any of that, and so I immediately went in and fed it about 150 PC classics.
You gave it right down to Airfix Dogfighter.
Which it turns out I'm the only person on Raptor who's played, which is amazing.
That's a brilliant game.
Excellent. That's a bit like Google whacking, is it?
I believe it.
So, yes, anyone else who owns Airfix Dogfighter and is on Raptor, please do add it, because it's not going to pick it up for itself, I don't think.
I don't think they're going to get it a sequel anytime soon.
Yeah, his little client sits in the system tray and just keeps an eye on what games you're playing and logs the times on the website. It's obviously, you know, don't volunteer for this sort of thing if you value your privacy that much. But
or want to pretend to be working all day.
But me being something of a public figure and everything, I thought, I'll go on then, yeah, we'll bang it on there. And I've put it's got all the little website inserts you can put on your own website to put the little card up and everything, and that's on the vanhemlock.com website as well. And it's got friends lists, and I've been chatting to a few people here and there on it already, so it's good stuff. Yeah, but largely it was all about the metrics, wasn't it? We're trying to...
Yes.
We're always continually trying to get a handle on numbers. We like numbers, probably because we've got that kind of weird OCD where you can't just let things lie and accept things for what they are. So we need numbers. We need to know precisely how well everything is doing against everything else so we can rate it all. Starting on... only 66 on Metacritic. Oh, yeah. Anyway,
Now, one of the interesting things this has is for each game... that's being tracked by the users of the service who are running the client.
Yep.
It will say something like January the 29th, 105 people played this game for 255 hours, and it was added by two people.
Okay, so over the space of one day, 255 hours of playtime were logged in Raptor.
By 105 individual people, and this is for Star Trek Online.
Okay.
Now, if we would look at any other MMO, except for WoW, which is just slightly differently,
yes,
you get similar numbers. Now, you can compare them against each other.
Yeah.
And get some form of metric from Raptor users.
Yes, okay, so we're talking Raptor. So Raptor users are probably a quite self-selecting bunch. They're people who want to volunteer this information. This isn't exactly a blind taste test or any kind of cross-referenced or cross-sectional sample. But you would imagine, I suppose, well, I'm trying to work this out. And you do comment if you disagree or so. Are the sorts of people who play, who will engage with Raptor, skewed toward a particular sort of game? Or can we just use the ratios between Raptor users to then extrapolate to overall users for all the game?
We're not going to get the absolute numbers, but we will get the ratio of numbers.
So if it turns out twice as many people played EverQuest 2 in one day than Star Wars Online, Star Trek Online or whatever, is that... is that just only valid for Raptor, or is that ratio valid for total users, total concurrency?
It's a good question.
Now, I reckon we can go through Eve for this. Because
Eve announced 330,000, wasn't it?
Eve are very upfront about their numbers. They show you how many players are currently logged on when you log in, and they've got all sorts of websites and tracking graphs and all the rest of it. Now, if Eve Online appears on Raptor, we can use that as a kind of reference point. And from there, then extrapolate through all the other games. I don't know. But that all hinges on whether Raptor users are more or less likely to play Eve than non-Raptor users. I don't know. It's quite a fascinating sort of statistical...
Eve Online only has a Metacritic of 69.
Blimey. Some people are never happy.
Yeah.
That's because a lot of people got ganked and then went away and wrote a bad review about it, I expect.
Well, Eve's a lot more popular than EverQuest or...
So, yeah, I don't know. It's fascinating. I mean, I've seen a bit of blogging there. Is it simpleandcomplex.com, the blog there? Blogspot.com? I can't remember... Chat there keeps changing his name every 5 minutes, but he was running a lot of interesting articles using XFire.
Now XFire has basically collapsed in on itself.
Is it not really useful, not relevant anymore?
The numbers have dropped off dramatically ever since it was bought out.
Ah.
And the people left and
presumably going here
left and started off Raptor before it got bought out.
So
I think there's something here that we can do, and we should put some numbers together.
I'd like to be using this. Well, yeah, I'm contributing myself. That's why I signed up. I thought, well, you know, we need to give it more data so it can generate more fair and useful and interesting numbers. But I think these numbers can help us. I think these numbers can be useful for us punditry types in getting some handle on how Game A is doing against Game B. But it does all depend on a number of assumptions, which I've yet to decide are valid or not. And, yeah. So if you have any kind of interest in numbers and are of a statistical bent, then do chip in on the forum or whatever. We'll set up a forum thread or something for this as well. But
yeah, we'll put some numbers up this week on the forum. So,
But also discussion of how to apply these numbers would be fascinating. I think if we could come to some sort of understanding of how best to interpret this data. There's a lot of data here, and some of it will be of more use than others. And I think using it, we can get some greater understanding of the genre.
If we have any statistician listeners, we'd be glad to get confused by what you say.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
But anyway, failing that, if you're just curious and want to stalk me through my gaming online, then you can find me on the vanhenlock.com website. There's a thing on the side with a link.
It's pretty hard to miss.
Raptor.com/vanhenlock or something.
Yeah.
And yes, you can see what I'm playing and when, and keep an eye on me. Stage an intervention if it looks like I'm getting out of hand.
You're getting out of hand. You've had it installed since when?
I don't believe it. About the 10 hours in Bioshock 2. I swear I only play that for two. I think something's gone on wrong there.
Uh-huh.
Mind you, I was checking at work on Friday, and throughout the entire day it told me you were playing Test Drive Unlimited. So
I think it still thinks I'm playing Test Drive Unlimited.
It's gone a bit wrong.
Yeah.
That raises interesting questions.
I'm currently playing 99 Nights.
I know for a fact you're doing no such thing. Yeah, so perhaps it's not quite as scientific as it could be, but even so, I think probably useful.
Well, the thing
useful
is,
metrics.
The PC one pulls out using the client, but the 360 one uses the API and their servers, so it can pull your achievements out quite easily. You don't have to run the client, which is interesting because, you know, it tracks the achievements. And something I'd like it to do would be to show more of a breakdown on the achievements.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you got your achievements for that.
Yeah, but there's some very interesting numbers. A true achievement, if you sign up for that, you're probably by definition of a boosting kind of guy who wants to increase their score.
I suppose, yeah.
But the Raptor ones, I just like the idea of seeing what percentage of users got this achievement when this achievement could be complete first mission or completed the game.
It's worth noting it does let you untrack specific titles, so if you've got anything in your library that you're particularly ashamed of, you can disable tracking specifically for that, like I've done for Barbie Horse Adventures. Oh!
I don't know why you're ashamed of that. That's a harsh 1,000 points.
And obviously, if you just don't feel like having your movements tracked for that day, right click and exit in the system tray.
Well, there's the thing, when you're meant
turn it
to
off.
Be at work and your boss is following you on this
stealth mode.
And of course, it will also spam to Twitter and Facebook and annoy people if you are jealous.
Yeah, you can link it to Facebook. I think all of you have all the common chat clients, AIM, MSN, all that. Like you can add those into it as well. It sort of functions as a bit like a global communications center for all that as well.
The only
seems
big,
quite handy.
The only big problem is the PS3 support.
Does it not do it?
It does.
I thought I saw it. Add your PS3 thing.
They've added it in recently, but because Sony don't let you have access to any API, like what Microsoft do. Although Microsoft do it grudgingly, I believe, to stop people scraping their site. What happens is the client has to run and scrape their site. So if your client's not running, you don't pick up your achievements and your trophies. And of course, the trophies don't update in real time unless you tell it to sync. And
it's got instructions for everything on its website, big old FAQ and all the rest of it. So but have a read through.
But in general, we feel that Raptor and programs of that ilk are not evil.
Well, I never bothered with it before, but I can't work out if that was an actual animosity or I just couldn't be bothered. I mean, I've started doing it now mostly because I start to forget how much stuff I've played. And I've seen how useful it is when you get to your bit of the What We're Playing show. It's all right for you. Yours is all held there on the screen and you can just look through it all. I suppose I ought to try and remember this stuff anyway, otherwise my mind will go all spongy, early onset Alzheimer's or something. But
in general,
I don't know, it depends. It depends entirely as a voluntary basis. I don't hold with the idea of it being mandatory, for God, no. No, I mean, this is obviously about, privacy and security and all the rest of it, You only submit this information if you feel you want to contribute. But as a general project, as a wealth of knowledge, as a source of being able to corroborate these sorts of numbers, get a handle on how it's all going, well, I'm all for it, because I love numbers.
Yeah, and that's why we mention it. We're going to be trying to track the MMOs and see how they're actually going and see if we can't get some meaningful numbers out of this.
So obviously the more people who contribute to these kinds of numbers and averaging exercises, the more accurate they become. So have a look, see what you think. Not demanding anyone installs it, but you never know, you might get something out of it.
And if you have got it and added us as friends, then please do, because it's always fun to watch what rubbish I'm
playing.
I'll
friend anyone, me.
Yeah. I mean, you'll be able to find out that I've played 99 nights in the last day.
And still are, apparently.
I've got so many plays through on that game now. Yes. Anyway, I guess that's it for topics.
Are we all done?
I believe we are.
Okay. What did you learn this week?
I learnt that 99 Nights is still pants. But the combat is still better than DC Universe Online.
And I learnt that jam is brilliant and that my aunt's an awesome cook.
Your aunt's jam was really, really quite nice.
Surreal scone Friday at work, and I brought in the jam.
Office full of people just going on how great this jam was.
Elderflower and gooseberry, an unexpected combo that works quite well. So with that, we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.